holding on your Testament days by the Mishnah. Okay, now that we've covered Regel and all the details, now we come to covering Shein and its uses. Mishnah says, Kesed HaShein Mu'edes Lechel HaTaroi Lo. How is Shein Mu'ed, again, Rashi learns it as a question and an answer. How is Shein Mu'ed in the sense that it will eat, that it will eat anything that's roi, anything that's suitable for that particular kind of animal to eat for food? Well, in other words, it's always mu'ad. It's always a normal thing for animals to eat whatever food is normal for them. Therefore, it's mu'ad in the sense it's always going to be nezek shalom. There's no the first three times chatzi nezek and after that nezek shalom or anything of that sort. Again, Rashi is saying that the case of Hashem mu'edes is the question and lechel of the roi lo is the answer. And then the Mishnah continues by expanding on it, or not really expanding on. We said the other day that actually Hashem versus a behemah means a wild animal versus a domestic animal. Tosfos in the previous Mishnah had understood that, just like we said, Kesed HaRegel Mu'edes, L'shava B'derech Hiluchah, Tosfos understood that it was all one long statement, or one long question, rather, Kesed HaRegel Mu'edes, L'shava B'derech Hiluchah, namely that HaBohemah Mu'edes, etc. The Pashtos, I guess, Tosfos would say the same thing over here, that it's a long question, Kesed HaShein Mu'edes, L'chel HaSaroyla, and the answer would be HaBohemah Mu'edes, etc. But we said tomorrow, the other day, actually, that maybe not, because Shein Mu'edes means that a wild animal is mu'ad to eat things that are appropriate for it, meat, for example, as the Gemara will say. And a domestic animal is mu'ad to eat the things that are roi to it, for example, fruits and vegetables. So the Mishnah continues, a behemah mu'ad is lechel peiros ha'yirachos. A behemah, meaning a domestic animal, is mu'ad to eat fruits and vegetables. Achol ksus ha'kelim. On the other hand, if the animal ate, let's say, clothing or dishes, that would be unusual. Mashalim chatzi nezek, therefore you pay chatzi nezek. Now, when is this talking about? If it was in Rishus HaNizek, that's when you pay for Shein. But if it happened in Rishus HaRabim, you'll be potter. Now, is that talking about only the case where it's paid a sviyadokas, or also the case where it's ksus v'kelim? That we're going to discuss in a little bit in the Gemara on Chof HaBarabim. Maybe there might be reason. We'll see in the Gemara that even though we're arguing that Susa Kalim on the face of it is Karen Yor Mikhayev in Rosh Hashanah, we're going to see that there would be a reason, there would be a rabble, there would be a reason over there to say that you'd be potter on other grounds. We'll see.
In other words,
Ksus and Kalim, even though you would think it's unusual, Karen, nevertheless, we can argue that there's a reason for you to be potter, as the Gemara will discuss later. The imnenis, however, if the animal had hana, so let's say it ate, we're not talking about clothes or dishes, we're talking about it ate something which is unusual for it. However, it did have hana. The fact is, it got nourishment from it, for example. Therefore, b'shalam is masha nenis. Therefore, granted in Rosh Hashanah, because it's unusual, or it's in Rosh Hashanah, as the case may be, you don't pay nezek shalom then, but you pay at least masha nenis. You pay the amount that the amount that it benefited from it. How do you figure that out? So we'll talk in the Gemara a couple of possibilities. But what it boils down to is, in other words, you know, you might have, let's say, the Gemara will give us an example. A cow ate barley, for example. Cows don't normally eat barley, but it is nutritious after all. So therefore, you should pay something. The fact is, you, the owner of the cow, are gaining from the fact you don't have to feed the animal later because it has something to eat now. Therefore, you should have to pay for that. Kates and Mashalam is Mashanenis. What are some examples of paying Mashanenis, which again is not going to be the full value of what it ate, but something less, as we'll discuss in the Gemara. For example, if the animal ate something that's in the middle of the street, the Rechava literally means like the square, like the center or the middle of the street, Mashalam is Mashanenis, then you only pay Mashanenis because that's Rosh Hashanah. On the other hand, but if it ate from the side of the street, which is not totally like Rosh Hashanah, that can already be considered to a certain extent Rosh Hashanah. This is sort of the sidewalk, yeah. Then you pay the full value, the actual amount that it was mazik. To be exact, Rashi says what we're talking about, we're still talking about, again, that it ate something unusual. So never mind, actually, Nezek Shalom. It ate something unusual, therefore, it ate something unusual for it, therefore, it still is Keren. It's still going to be Chatzi Nezek, and it's the Mu'ad Nezek Shalom. But within that itself, even if we're considering it Keren, if it was in the middle of the street, then it'll only be Masha Nezek. rather than Mashi Zikah.
How would you differentiate between Mashi Nenes
and... Again, Mashi Nenes is a cheaper amount. Mashi Zikah means the full value, or in the case of a tam, half the value of what it is. Mashi Nenes would be within that, you're going even cheaper than that. You, for example, the Gemara will give us, according to one opinion, well, we're going to have two opinions in the Gemara, but the Rabbah and Rabbah, but let's say, for example, one opinion of Rabbah is the value of the equivalent amount of straw. So you'd say, let's say, for example, it eight is barley. You would figure out how much would an equivalent amount of straw be worth in volume or whatever, yeah, and then, yeah. And then chafti nezik or nezik shalom as the case may be. Then chafti or the whole of that as the case may be. Similarly, pesach hachanus. Similarly, if the animal ate stuff that was in the entrance to the store, meshalemes mashanenis, then again you only pay what it had hanah because that's unusual for it to eat something from the front of the store. Mitoch hachanus, but if it actually eats it inside the store, that is definitely chatzar nizik. Therefore, mashalamas mashi izika. Therefore, you pay the actual head.
That's also,
but not as much. Well, so that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. We're not really going to have most of this. We're going to have most of this discussion about the difference between, for example, the front of the store and the inside of the store. We're going to have most of that on Chafalas on tomorrow. That's the shame. The teeth of an animal are moored to eat what's appropriate for this kind of animal. Ketzad, what do we mean by appropriate? If an animal goes into the chotzer of the nizik, and it ate something over there, and it ate food that's appropriate for there over there, or it drank drinks that are appropriate for it, nezik cholim, then nezik cholim. Again, there's no tam versus moored distinction in shame.
And if it's in the Rishus HaMitzvah, but it's not usual?
That's what we're going to talk about. Wait. V'chein chaya sh'nichnas ala chatzar nizik. Similarly, if a wild animal comes into the nizik's chatzar, v'torfa behem of v'ochla, and it ripped up an animal and ate it, v'ochla b'ochla, and ate meat, v'shalom nezik sholem, same thing, nezik sholem, because, again, that's more, that's normal behavior.
No kirin.
No. Well, again, we said in the previous parak, we said that there's a five or six or seven or was different kinds of wild animals. We said over there are muad la'olam. What we said over there, that meant, Rashi had explained over there, that meant muad la'olam, in the Tosfos actually, had explained over there, it meant muad la'olam in the sense each one of them has its own normal, customary, innate behavior of doing things. For example, we talked about over there, lions only eat their prey alive, the point is, each one has its characteristic behaviors, and it's muad for them. And then again, we said over there again that the Rambam says they're more la'olam in the sense that they're more no matter what they do. But anyway, the point is definitely a lion, let's say, comes into somebody's rishus. Some person's pet lion comes into somebody else's rishus, rips up an animal and eats it. That's exactly what lions do. However, upara sha'ocha sa'odin, but if you have, now what about, for example, you have a cow ate barley, actually, so I mentioned that as an example of chafinezah, of not being the regular thing. That was a mistake of mine, actually. The Gemara is going to say now that it is unusual, but it's not so unusual, because in a pinch, it would eat this kind of stuff. So that wasn't a good example, actually. A better example would be, we're going to mention the stupid, for example, that ate meat. No. A cow eating barley. Oh, I mean, I mentioned a minute ago cow eating barley, but that was wrong, actually. We're giving that as an example of nezek shalom as well, because even though it's true, cows don't usually eat barley, but it's not completely out. It's not completely unheard of. It will, in a pinch, if there's nothing else available yet. So if a cow eats barley, a chamor she'ochel karshinin, or a donkey eats karshinin, it has beans, the kelev she'likik et hashemen, or a dog licked up oil. Or pig came and ate a piece of meat, the shaman nezek shalom, and they also won't pay nezek shalom. Because all of those cases is called achila al yedei hadchak. It's not something the animal would know. A dog wouldn't normally lick up oil, a cow wouldn't normally eat barley, etc. But in a pinch, if there was nothing else available, then they would, basically. So, Omer Apapa, Hashtag Amit Talmidid Lab Urche Ba'achla La Yat Chak Shmachila. Well, then, if you're saying that anything which an animal, true, doesn't normally eat, but in a pinch it would eat it if there was nothing better available, and you're saying that is shmeyachilah, that is considered for our purposes normal eating, and it's considered full-fledged chain, and therefore nezek shalim. By that logic, let's give some other examples. Hani chai shunra de'ochol tamri, if a cat eats date, which a cat does, it's a cat. Shunra is a cat. Eat date. Cats don't. It's not normal for a cat to eat dates. Normally, it eats mice or whatever cats normally eat. They don't usually eat fruit. Nevertheless, they in a pinch they might. Yeah. Or if a donkey eats fish, mishalom nezek shalom. Neither of those cases nezek shalom, because again, it may not be usual, but it's been known to happen. It's been known that the owner of a cat, if he doesn't have anything else, we'll give a date, that sort of thing.
So what,
is that out of the ordinary? So it's out, but not completely out of the ordinary. As opposed to, for example, when the Mishnah said that the animal ate clothes or dishes, that's completely out of the ordinary.
So the fact that it's a bit out of the ordinary
is not enough to pastor him from yet. It still remains Shane with all the usual rules of Shane. The Gemara tells a case. There was a donkey once who ate bread and also palse the basket that the bread was in. Rashi gives two possibilities of palse. One is that he chewed it, and the other one is that he broke it. He ripped it in half. Either way, so the bread is gone, and the basket is also gone. So Rabbi Huda made him chayev to pay the owner of the donkey to pay nezek shalom for the bread, because that's shame, and chasi nezek for the fowl, for the basket, because that would be kerem. Now, Rabbi Huda was in bubble, by the way, you don't do knas in bubble, we established that before. The pashtus, what it means is, Rabbi Huda said, you're chayev chasi nezek, we can't collect it in bubble. However, if the nizek wants to force you to go to Eretz Yisrael, as we learned in the previous Perek, in order to have it judged there by based in smuchim, then you're going to be obligated to go.
Why is it itself?
Keren is chasi nezek, a keren is a knas. We know that, we've established that in the previous Perek. We had the machloikas, whether it was moment or knas. We established that it's knas. Okay, you could also say Rabbi Yehuda maybe held according to the opinion that's mammon. Okay, whatever. The question is, why would it only be chatzi nezek? Kiven de orche lemechol nama, if you're going to argue that it's normal for the donkey to eat the bread, orche nama lefobot zala, fine. Isn't it normal for it to also damage the basket? The answer is yes. If you're talking about that while it was trying to get to the bread, meanwhile it chewed through the basket, sure. But the case is the orche vahoda polis. Cases first it ate the bread, then afterwards it started gnawing on the basket. That's unusual. Yeah. Okay. Question is a pastor. Okay, who? Fine. You're telling me though that eating bread is normal for a donkey. Or a minu. I have a contradiction. A price is also a pastor boss of a top shill. If an animal eats bread or meat or a cooked dish, a stew, whatever, mishalom chatzin ezek. My lab of hema. Isn't that right? It's talking about domestic animals, including donkeys. So it's not normal for any of them to eat these things. The answer is loy b'chaya, not necessarily, because it's a pet b'raisa. It's talking about wild animals. The question is chaya b'chaya. No, it didn't say behemoth. It says ochla pasta b'chaya b'chaya. It didn't say what kind of creature it was. So we started assuming behemoth. No, you could say it means chaya. The question is chaya b'chaya. Fine, isn't it normal for chaya to eat meat? As we said before, the answer is the mitzvah. First of all, we could be talking about the meat is roasted. Animals, normal for wild animals, it's normal for them to eat raw meat. It's not normal for them to eat roasted. The very same of Batavia. Or second of all, you're talking about wild animals. Who says you mean wild animals as in predators? You can mean, for example, a wild animal as in a deer. Deers are herbivores. They don't eat meat. So even if it was raw meat. Yes. Yeah, when the turtle lists the 10 kosher land animals, you have 3 behemoths and 7 chayas, and then one of the 7 chayas is a deer. Yeah. So deer are in the category of chayas. They don't eat meat. If a deer would eat meat, even raw meat, it would be a shinui. The same loyal of a behemoth, or I could even answer, maybe after all, we are even talking about domestic animals. You're going to say then that the So you're going to say that it's talking about domestic animals, and you're going to say then that the Braita is saying it's unusual for a domestic animal to eat bread. So how does that fit with Rabbi Yehuda making the guy pay nezek shalom for the bread that a donkey ate? Because over pesoyah, you could say that the animal, the domestic animal, let's say, ate the food off the table. It's not normal for an animal, domestic or wild, to reach on to take it off the table and eat it.
It's not so.
Okay, so because of it's true. Another way of looking at it is it's not so unusual, and therefore Rabbeinu Hananel has a different girsa over here. His girsa, which a number of other Rishonim also approve of, is not the pesoda between the table, but the pesoda, which means bread that's broken up, like they put in soup, like when you put croutons and like when you put croutons in soup. That it would be unusual for an animal to eat. You're unusual enough that you would say that would be chatzinei.
Maybe they put it in an animal, so croutons, it would eat it.
Maybe loose ones, but not when they're in the soup already. So therefore, either way, however you look at it, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the guy whose donkey ate the bread is chayev nezek shalom for the bread, because the braita doesn't contradict it, because either the braita is talking about wild animals eating bread, or it's talking about domestic animals eating it off the table or out of the soup or whatever, whereas in this case, it was none of the above. It was the basket with bread in it, and the donkey ate the bread. It's not usual for a donkey to eat bread, it's true, but it is achila yedzak. It is something that a donkey would conceivably eat. Another case, the Gemara says, Ahu Barcha, there was a billy goat, a male goat, the chazal lifta apum of the dana, it saw a turnip sitting on top of a barrel of wine.
Turnip?
Turnip.
Oh, a turnip.
Yeah, sitting on a barrel of wine. Sorich, solik, he climbed up the barrel and got up, achla la lifta, and ate the turnip, betavra la dana, and broke the barrel. In this case, Rava made the owner of the goat pay for both the turnip and for the barrel of wine, nezek shalom. My timer.
Like the wine in the barrel?
Doesn't matter. The barrel itself still has a value. My timer. Why is that? Given the urche lemecha lifta, since it's normal enough for goats to eat to eat turnips, goats actually will eat pretty much anything, but it's normal enough for it to eat a turnip. It's just as normal for the goat to climb up there and get up there, and therefore, in other words, that all of that can be considered normal behavior. We wouldn't say that it's an unusual thing, and therefore we can. We say it's all part of shame. It's all part of it having hanok.
Goats
can eat pretty much anything. It's a known thing, for example, you know, they'll eat the labels off cans. When I was a kid at a petting zoo, one time a goat started nibbling on my titsis. Yeah. So titsis, okay, we're saying in the mission of the Katina. I was 5 years old then. I was, yeah. Okay. Omer Ilfa, another din. Behemoth of Rishos HaRabim, if you have one animal in Rishos HaRabim, who pushed a savor of Achol me'al gabi chaberta, and it stuck out its neck and ate food that was on the back of another animal. Then chayeves. Then you chayev nezek shalom. It's in Rishos HaRabim, and it's shame you should be called to Rishos HaRabim, because my time, a gabe chaberta for chatar nizik dami, because the back of the other animal is like chatar nizik. The Gemara says, Lema Messiah. Should we say then that we can prove this from the following Braisa? A Braisa says, Hosiku Possum of Shelosbachar. If a person is walking down the street with his basket or box or whatever hanging behind him, full of stuff, or Poshta Savar of Ochlo Menu, and an animal stuck out its neck and ate out of it, Chayevet, then you're Chayev. So Bechorah, same idea, because the box, even though you're standing in Rishos HaRabim, the box would be considered Rishos HaNizik. The answer is not necessarily. Can you prove from that braisa? Because kid'omar rabba b'kefeset, just like we find another case which we're going to quote in a second, where Rava says that there may be a difference whether the animal jumped up on top of the other animal and ate, and then we would say jumping up on top of the other one is unusual, and that would make it chatzi nezek. Hachanami b'kefeset, the same thing over here. It might be that we're not talking. Maybe in fact, taka if it were to just reach up its neck and nibble out of the box, it would be considered shame versus Adam would be potter. But because it jumped up, which is unusual, that would make it Karen and make it and the usual rules of Karen would apply, where Karen applies versus Adam.
If it jumped, it would be considered unusual.
Right, that's what we're saying.
And
therefore it would be Karen. And Karen is chayiv and reshus rabbin. It is reshus chayiv and reshus rabbin, half or all, the case may be. Whereas if we considered it shein, it wouldn't be, because it would be reshus rabbin. So therefore, we might argue the braisa, when it's talking about the animal eating out of the box, doesn't necessarily mean just that the box is at the level of the animal's mouth and it just reaches over and takes. It could be that we're talking about that it's higher up and it has to jump to get to it. But that jumping is unusual.
Therefore,
and therefore it would be keren. But you can't prove necessarily that if it just reached over where it was right there and ate, that it would still be considered shein versus a yachid versus a nizik and mikhayim. Maybe not, but you can't prove it from this braisa. Okay, where did Rava say his original statement about a difference between between the animal standing there versus jumping? Aha, it was Rava said it in connection with the following din. If you have an animal walking along in Rishas Rabim, if it was walking and it ate, it's potter. Stood there and ate, then it would be chayev. You have to ask Maishna Holcha de Urchi. Why are you saying it's potter if it's walking? Because it's normal for it to eat.
Ate it in the Rosh Hashanah.
Yes.
Then it's potter.
But we're saying there's a difference. We're saying there's a difference whether it's walking while it's eating or whether it's standing still while it's eating. Now the question is why? Walking while it's eating is perfectly normal. Omdanami Urchi, isn't it normal for an animal to also stand in the Rosh Hashanah and eat? And I'm a Rava b'kefetet. That is where Rava said the difference is that. Standing means kefetet, meaning that we're not just talking about stood still and started nibbling from something on the. It's talking about that it actually jumped up. Rashi says it jumped up onto the neck of another, onto the neck or back or whatever of another animal. Or for that matter, it could be the person walking along with the box over there, where it jumped onto his back and started eating. Either way, the point is, again, because that would be, so in other words, when the distinction Rav Oshia is making is basically, again, between Shein and Keren. If it's walking along normally and it just, you know, it finds food right in front of it or it bends down its head or whatever and finds it right there, that's Shein. But if it has to jump up onto the other animal or the person or whatever to get it, and then it becomes Keren, and then different rules apply. And therefore you'd be chayiv, even though it's Rosh Hashanah, because Keren is chayiv and Rosh Hashanah. I've been here for the time, and then more than that, the usual. Boy, Rabzera, Misgalgo Mahu, what happens if the thing is rolling? Now, Rashi learns that means that the animal is rolling the thing long. The thing started off in one rishus, and the animal, as it's eating, it's rolling it along into the other rishus. The Gemara, the Girsa that we have here in front of us in the Gemara is that it started out in Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and the animal was rolling it out, pushing it along into Rosh Hashanah Rabim. On the side of it here, Rashi points out that really it could just as well be the other way around also, and in fact on the side of it here in Hagos Tzionim, it mentions that in fact a number of other Rishonim to begin with have the Girsa the other way, that would have to be if it was going from Rosh Hashanah Rabim into Rosh Hashanah Yachid would be the question. Tosfos, anyway, that's all according to Rashi and most other Rishonim. Tosfos has that's talking about the animals pushing it along. Tosfos has a completely different understanding based on several questions about that. That we're not talking about the animal was pushing it along. We're talking the thing itself, as the animal is eating it, is rolling along. The difference would be that the difference, not rolling along per se, the difference is, in other words, it's where it started off in one rishus, it started rolling, in the end, you wound up, that for example, it was a basket full of food, let's say, it wound up, half of it is in rishus rab, and half of it is in rishus yafi. It ate the whole thing. Well, it's high for the whole thing, it's high only for the part that was in the rishus anezit.
If it's right in the middle between the rishus anezit.
Well, it's not between, it's either one or the other. So the half of it, that's the thing. No, well, there's no no man's land between them.
No, it could be half of the...
That's exactly what Tosfos is saying. And that's what the Gemara is going to discuss also. I mean, according to Rashi, it also is that way. The difference is, according to Rashi, the animal itself, as it's going along and eating it, is moving it along until it winds up maybe part way in one or part way in the other. According to Tosfos, it would be that not the animal is moving it along, but just it itself is rolling or it itself is moving, and it winds up on the board. Anyway, So what would be the din? The Gemara says, hey, Chidomi, what exactly are we talking about? Because going to Kaima, Omer Birshus HaYochid. Imagine, for example, that you have a sheaf of grain, or a bundle of grain, that started out in Birshus HaYochid, becomes Galgava Ossi, Birshus HaYochid, Birshus HaRabim, and it's rolling and going from Birshus HaYochid to Birshus HaRabim, or again, according to the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim, the other way around, whatever. So what would be the din? Basically, the question is, do we go according to the fact started out in Rishus HaYochid, therefore Yechayev, now it's in Rishus HaRabim. What?
When we talk about Akira Vahanacha?
So the Akira Vahanacha, though...
Yeah, the day we spoke about that?
But that was, you have one Akira and one Hanacha. Here you have it moving along the what do you call it? At some point it crosses over from Rishus HaYochid into Rishus HaRabim, but it's not. You know what? There's a similar thing in Hilchos Shabbos. There's a difference between, for example, taking something and throwing it from one Rishus into another, where only after it's out of your hand it crosses Rishus, versus where you're dragging it along and there comes a moment there where you yourself have actually moved it from one Rishus to another. For example, the Gemara talks about it in Shabbos in connection with the din of a person steals a purse on Shabbos. Is he chayev? Do we say come later to Rabbah B'nei or not? Since he's going to be chayev, he's going to be chayev misa for the carrying out from one rishus to the other on Shabbos. But what about paying for the gneva? So it depends. If he picked it up, it depends. If he dragging it along the ground, for example, versus if he picked it up and is carrying it. Where then, if he picked it up, he first did a kinyan on it, and only then later on comes the Isser Shabbos, where he's dragging it along, and it comes at the same time. But that's not exactly the same thing. Where it started eating and where it finished eating, yeah. No. As far as here. So that's the question, basically. Do we go according to where it started or where it ended? So Mai, what would be the din? Tashma, the Tani of Priya, Masui, suppose a person is carrying a bundle, a burden, and part of it is inside in Rishus HaNizik, and part of it is outside in Rishus HaRabim, Ochel b'fnim chayevet, Ochel b'chutz p'tura. If it ate the part that was inside, the owner will be chayev. If it ate the part that's outside, Rishus HaNizik, if it ate the part that's outside, which is in Rishus HaRabim, you'll be potter. Now, my love, Ms. Galgavos, L'chora, isn't that exactly our case, where the animal is rolling it all along, or it itself is rolling along, whatever, and it winds up on the border? The answer is like, not necessarily, because, Ema, what you might reinterpret the braisa, you might put different words in it and say, ochla, ochla, if the animal ate the whole thing, al-masha b'fnim chayavis, al-masha b'chutz p'tura. Fine. Whatever it ate that was inside at the time that it ate it, you'll be chayav. Whatever happens to be outside, it'll be potter. In other words, the way we had the braisa originally was ochel b'fnim versus ochel b'chutz implies that the animal itself was standing on the inside or standing on the outside. Now we're saying that maybe no, that doesn't matter. It's more a matter of whatever part is on the outside, you'll be potter for whatever part is on the inside, regardless of where the animal is standing. It's not really a question of where the thing started out or not. The fact is, there's something that it ate from the inside, and that's the part you're high on. Even though maybe it started out on the outside, even though maybe, for example, when the animal started eating, it was on the outside and then kicked it along into the inside or whatever.
Can't you say that when the animal pushed it into the inside, you're high automatically? Without the behemoth starting to eating as soon as it was...
No, just pushing it there is not going to make you chayev for anything. Only when the animal starts eating it are you going to be chayev.
We're saying
what you do is you don't consider really where it started out or where it started out. Where is it actually being eaten. Or another possibility.
He starts eating inside and then pushing it outside.
That's what we're saying. Then we're saying that whatever you ate in Rishus HaNizik, you're going to be chayev. Whatever you ate in Rishus HaRabim, you're going to be potter. Or another possibility. Maybe Rav Chiya is only talking about, for example, if you have long stalks of asfasta. Hey, so you have long stalks where each individual stalk has part of it inside and part of it outside. Then maybe you distinguish between the part that it ate with the part. Then maybe you distinguish between the part that was inside versus the part that was outside. Whereas, let's say, for example, you were talking about smaller smaller fruits or vegetables or whatever. So let's say, for example, you know, it's a basket of apples, let's say. Some of the individual apples are completely in Rishus Rabim. Some of them are completely in Rishus Yachid. Then that might be different. Then you say so for example, in that case, the animal, let's say, would eat. So in other words, when it comes to aspasta, for example, when you the difference is because it stalks. When you eat one end, the other end automatically gets schlepped along with it. So then you can say, for example, you start eating the end that is in Rishus Rabim. As you're eating it, you're schlepping the end that is in Rishus Yachid, that's in Rishus Nizik. Well, therefore, you're going to end up being potter because at the time it ate it, it was all in Rishus Rabim. Whereas when it comes to a basket of, let's say, Rashi says, for example, barley. Any individual grain of barley is either inside or outside. So then you might say differently. Whatever part was inside is inside, or you chayev. Whatever part was outside, you puzzle. Mishnah says, the Mishnah continued,
if you have a fruit, and the fruit is connected to a tree, the branch is connected to the shusamita, so the fruit is outside.
It's a good question. Usually in halacha, we say you go according to where, when it comes to attached fruit. Usually you say you go according to where the trunk is. So maybe in that case it would be considered a shusamita.
Or
kind of it's
outside.
It's possible, I don't know. The Mishnah said, the Mishnah talked about a case where an animal ate clothes or dishes or whatever, and we said, you pay chatinezek, because it's unusual. And then we said, when is all this talking about Rishus HaNizek, but not Rishus HaRab? And then you'd be potter. So the question is, Aheya, which part, when the Mishnah says that there's a difference between Rishus HaNizek and Rishus HaRab, which statement is it referring to? Is it referring to the case where an animal eats fruits and vegetables, which is usual shein? Or is it even talking about the case where it ate clothes or dishes, which would be unusual? Yeah. So, Amar Rav, Akulu. Rav says it actually refers to all of them. Now, we can understand why it refers to fruits and vegetables, because that's shame. Why should it apply to clothes and dishes, which are keren? The reason is, my time, kol hamishaneh, if one person changes, if one person does an unusual thing, for example, what is he doing? Putting his clothes, his kelim, in Rishus HaRabim. And somebody else comes and makes a further shinui on it. An animal comes and eats them, which is not normal for an animal to eat. Potter. Then you'll be potter on that ground. In other words, had it been something which is normal for you to put down in Rishus HaRabim, and the animal ate it when it's something unusual for the animal, sure, that would be kelim. But in this case, you, the owner of the ksus or the kelim, bear some responsibility as well. What are your ksus or kelim doing in Rishus HaRabim? That's how Rabba. Ushmul, I'm aware Shmuel says no. Loishan or Alapedas Vidok says no. The Mishnah, the distinction between Rishus HaYachid, between Rishus HaNizik and Rishus HaRabim is only on the fruits and vegetables. Ava Ksus V'Kelem Chayevis. If it's Ksus V'Kelem, you're going to be Chayev either way because it's Kelem. And he doesn't hold of this Kol HaMashana business. V'Cheinam Rish Lakish Akulu. Similarly, Rish Lakish said the same thing as Rav, that it refers to both cases. As the Rish Lakish, the time, and in fact, Rish Lakish follows his own shita, the Amar Rish Lakish, because we have another din that Rish Lakish said, Shtei Paras Rishus HaRabim, if you have two cows in Rishus HaRabim, Achas Ruvutzav Achas Malachas, one of them is lying down in Rishus HaRabim, the other one is standing, the other one is walking, Bata Malachas Ruvutzav, if the one that's walking kicks the one that was lying down, Tura, then it's Pater. Because that would be Kol HaMashana or Ba'ach HaVashinaba. Yes, the animal that kicked did something unusual, and that ought to be considered Keren, but the owner of the first animal also did something unusual. What is he having? The animal lie down because it happened. Therefore, by the same logic that Rav just used, he'd be possible. The owner of the kicking animal would be possible. On the other hand, if the animal that's lying down kicked the one that's walking, that would be plain old Keren. Therefore, it would be higher.
She's lying down, and yet she's kicking while she's lying down.
Come on, and you know, an animal, when it's lying down, it still has the use of its legs, you know, it can still stick out of a leg. And Okay. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan said the same as Shmuel, that no, only fruits and vegetables would you be potter in Rishus HaRabim. Ksus and kelim, you'd be chayev, because never mind, it's kol hamashana. The fact is, your animal ate something which is unusual for it, and that's Keren.
Kol HaMashana
Kalmashana would be Rav and Rish Lakish. Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yechanan don't hold it. Okay. The question is, Lamed Rabbi Yechanan left led to Rish Lakish after the B'shtei Parit. Fine, in that case, you're going to say that Rabbi Yechanan disagrees with Rish Lakish also on the case of the two cows. The case of the two cows that we just said, one lying down and one walking by. By the way, Tosfos points out that according to Rish Lakish, there is need for him to mention both cases. Each one has a certain chiddush in it. There is a chiddush. On the one hand, it's not normal for a person to leave his clothes you might argue, frankly, as I was going to say in a second, that maybe sometimes a person will put his clothes down in the street when he wants to take a break, for example. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's less usual to have your animal lie down in the street. The chiddush in the other case. The chiddush in the other case is, on the other hand, what happens? Imagine if the animal that was lying down, not that it kicked the other animal, but what if, you know, the other animal could be harmed by it another way, it could trip over it. Then in that case, you would say, though, that the owner of the lying down animal was possible. Because we'll learn in the next parak, the reason is because that para, the one that was walking by, could have walked on the other side. It didn't have to doubt to walk over there and then run into this animal over here.
So that we're on. You said lying animal was like a boar.
But it's fine. But that's if the animal does it, the other animal doesn't notice it. Whatever. We'll get to that more in the next paragraph when we start learning all the ins and outs of Chakola versus obstacles in Shusarabim, which is a subset of birth, then we'll get back to the case and we'll discuss it in more detail. Anyway, going back to Agamara over here, it sounds like if a Yechon disagrees with Rish Lakish on this Tala Mashana business, then that would mean he would also argue with him in the case of the two cows. He would say that even the one that was walking by kicked the one that was lying down, he'd still be chayiv. It's still be chatinezek.
Kalamashane
is if one person did something that he shouldn't have done, like putting his sus in kalim and his rabim, and somebody else comes and damages him. The answer is no. No, Rav Yechanan might agree with Rish Lakish in the case of the two cows. The difference is sus abdi inchi demanchi, because demanchi glimiyum mitzchi. It is common enough that people might put down their clothes, their coat, let's say, in Rish Lakish, and take a breather for a bit. Therefore, it's not considered such a totally unusual thing that you could say on a Kalamashane. But it's not normal to have your animal lie down in the street, and therefore right there in the middle of the street, and therefore he would agree with Rish Lakish that's considered kolam shana, that's considered unusual enough that if the other animal kicked it, you'd be positive. The owner of the kicking animal would be positive. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, "Vim nenif mishalem." We said in the Mishnah that if an animal ate something that's unusual for it, but something that does have a nutritional value, then you would pay mashanenis, you would pay the amount of enjoyment that you got from it. So, Bakama, how much is that considered? Rabba Amit, that's what you're asking. Rabba Amit Zmei Amit. Rabba says it's the value of straw. So you figure out so Rashi gives the example, let's say, that suppose it ate enough barley to fill it up. You figure out how much straw would you have had to give it to fill it up. And that's the amount that you pay. What? Dmei Sarim, yeah.
Straw?
No. Dmei Omir. Dmei Omir means the value of straw. Rava Amar Dmei Sarim Bezer. Rava says it means the cheap price of barley. Yes, if it ate barley, you do make him pay the value of barley, but not the full retail price. You make him pay Bezer a cheaper price, which usually in Shaft, and Rashi says that's how it is, and here also, it means two-thirds of the regular value. Why not the full thing? Because
why he doesn't agree with the
Rabbah? We're going to see that we have two brises that both each one according to their opinion. But wait, okay. The point is like this: Rashi says the Rabbah would say that you only have to pay according to straw because the owner of the animal could say, "I wouldn't have given it barley to eat; I would have just given it straw. Why should you make me pay for any more than that?" On the other hand, Rabbah takes the view. The fact of the matter is that if he wanted to feed it barley, he would have had to go buy barley, but he could have found barley for a cheaper price, not necessarily you always pay full price. You can sometimes find somebody who's selling it for one reason or another at a discount, up to two-thirds. Therefore, that's all you can make to put him on the hook to pay.
easier to get straw than to get barley. You still have.
But the fact of the matter is, it did. No, the fact of the matter is, sometimes it might happen. And the owner of an animal does want to give it barley. He does get benefit. It's more nutritious than straw. Therefore, fine. You know, So the Gemara says, Tanya Kava said the Rabba, Tanya Kava said the Rabba. As a matter of fact, we have a Braitha like each opinion. Tanya Kava said the Rabba, a Braitha said Rav Shimon ben Yochai, and Mashallah said, let's make Omer Bilba. That Rav Shimon ben Yochai clearly says, you only pay the value of straw. Tanya Kava said the Rabba, that in Nenis, Mashallah, is Mashallah, Nenis, that if the animal had Hana, you pay the amount it had Hana. Ketan, Ocho Kava Kabayim, for example, an animal ate one or two Kavim, ate Omer Mashallah's name, you don't make him pay the full value of a Kav or two Kavim of barley. But we estimate how much would a person be willing to pay to feed his animal something that's not usual, or something that's appropriate for it, like barley, which is normal for animals to eat barley. You would do it only on a special occasion, if you're trying to fatten it up or whatever, but you would do that, even though it's not something usual. And therefore, that would be the two-thirds thing. And the bride,
when would you do it?
What do you mean, when do you do it?
When do you feed it with barley?
Sometimes it would happen. Normally on a day-to-day basis, you feed your animal straw. But once in a while, for a special occasion, you're about to sell it, for example, and you want it to be fatter, or you're fatten it up for Yom Tov, or whatever it is, once in a while, you'd feed it barley, a special treat.
And why just in this case?
Because that's what we're saying. Because the fact is, it did eat barley. You are gaining the fact that had you wanted to feed it barley, now you don't have to. So therefore, yeah. And the Braitha continues, and therefore, based on this, since we go according to Dava Haroi, law, something that's appropriate for this animal, so if the animal ate wheat, which is not good for an animal, unlike barley, wheat is not, I guess not, I don't know, maybe it's the gluten, I don't know, whatever it is, so if it ate wheat, or Dava Haroi, law, or something else is bad for it, sure enough, then you're potter, because then you didn't get any hana from it. And now the Gemara is going to start on kind of a new topic, but we're going to see near the beginning of the discussion that the Gemara is going to relate it. The Gemara is going to start by relating it to our Mishnah, and then the Gemara is going to continue on the sugya is going to continue into the middle of Chafala Hamarad. This is the famous sugya of Zen Nene Vizelei Chotzer. If you have one person is having Hana from something, and the other person whose property he's using for that did not suffer any loss by that, does he have to pay?
The first person is having Hana for the second person,
but the second person is not losing anything thereby.
Something.
Wait. Omelet of Chista the Rami Bachama. So it starts out like this. Rav Chista one time says to Rami Bachama, who, by the way, was his Talmud and eventually his son-in-law. The Gemara tells us in Bava Basra that Rami Bachama married Rav Chista's daughter, and later on Rava married her, either or different Mepharshim discussed whether Rami Bachama died or divorced her, whatever it is, and then Rava married her. Anyway, so one time Rav Chista says to Rami Bachama, Lehavis Gabon Ba'urta B'tchuma. It's a pity, he says, it's too bad you weren't by us yesterday evening in the Tchum. What do we mean in the Tchum? Rashi says it means literally, Rashi brings two possibilities. One is literally, it means in the Tchum, and it was Shabbos or Yom Tov or whatever. Had you been inside the Tchum, you would have been able to come to this Medrash and hear the discussion that we had. Then Rashi brings a second explanation, which also the Aruch brings, and a number of other Rishonim bring, that the Tchum means in the Bet Medrash. In the sense that it's like Tchum, it's the border, it's like the zone of Torah. Anyway, so you weren't there. Deboilon, Mili Malyasa. We were discussing. We asked about a very good deep question. Omar, my Mili Malyasa. So Rav Muhammad says, what was this great concept that you were talking about? Omar, so Rav Chista asked him. It says we were asking like this. Hador v'chatar chaveda shalevi daito. Suppose that somebody goes and lives in somebody else's chotzer without permission. So he squats there basically. Does he have to pay him rent, or does he not have to pay him rent? First of all, let's clarify the case. Hey, Chidoni, what's the case of it here? Elaim b'chotzer d'lo kaima la'agra v'gavra d'lo yavid l'megar. Are we talking about the chotzer is something that normally would not have been rented out? The owner of it has no interest in renting it out. However, this is a person, the squatter is somebody who usually doesn't go and rent.
The squatter?
The squatter, the person who's going, the Hador B'chatzal Chavera, the one who came.
We go by the squatter? Okay.
Because it's important to know, wait, the Gavra Ovid L'Megar, this person doesn't usually have a need to rent houses. For example, Rashi says he has another house of his own to live in. He has no particular need to live in this one. In that case, it's not Zenan of Zelei Chaser. Zelei Nan of Zelei Chaser. Zelei Chaser. The one person is not Nana in the sense that he could have lived in his own house for free or whatever, or some he has his own house, or other portions say, for example, he's an important person, he knows that people would give him free lodging, whatever it is. He had no need of this particular chaser. How is it a net? Wait, we're not talking about a net. Nezik, we'll talk about on our base. Wait, so far we're assuming there's no net. He went and spent the night there, let's say. If you're talking about that he could have just as well stayed someplace else for free, there's no nene, he's not having any particular hanah being here as opposed to anyplace else.
If it's a beautiful place,
why do you go there?
No, it's a beautiful garden, there's trees.
Okay, come on, we're talking about that we don't have. The point is, nene, the pashtus would be that there's a monetary value to it, that he would have had to otherwise pay X amount for a hotel room or whatever, and like this, he got free lodging. Well, if he has a house next door, let's say, he would have had free lodging there anyway. Or if anybody over there would roll out the red carpet for him and have him stay by them, then also, you know, he's not specifically gaining anything here monetarily. And the other guy is not chaser. So that can't be your thing. Then Nenev Zelei Chaser implies like he's saving, he would have had to pay $100 for a hotel room, and like this he's getting it for free. And then the other is not chaser. Here it's not that. El of the chaser, the kaim of the agra, the gavra, the other one. You're talking about the other way around. The chaser is something that normally this owner would have been renting out, and this person is usually somebody who would have had to rent a place locally. Well, then none of it is a chaser. In that case, yes, he's having hanah. The other guy definitely is a chaser. This guy who was there is preventing him from having rented it out. Yes. As a matter of fact, the Rosh says, even
for one night.
Now, okay, let's say it was more than one night. Actually, the Rosh says an interesting thing. Even let's say the squatter. Suppose he were to say to the Balabas, you know what, fine, I'll stay here. Look, you don't have tenants banging down your door right now. Anyhow, when you have people coming, then I'll move out right away. Nevertheless, the guy has the ability to tell him, if in a case like that, again, if the place is made for rental, no, because as long as people see that you're living there, they're going to think it's already rented out, and they're not even going to bother coming back.
Very true.
Okay, so either way, how do you have Zen Nan of Zella? And the answer is Leitzritha. The chaser to the Kaimel Agra. Suppose that the chaser is not usually made for renting out. The guy would not usually have been renting it out anyway. The Gavra, the Ovid Lamega, but this is a person who, he doesn't have any people who would offer him free lodging. He doesn't have a house nearby or whatever. He would have had to pay for a hotel room. So like this, he's gaining that he didn't have to pay for a hotel room. Mine. So then what's the deal? That's Zen Nan of Zelei Chaser. Tosfos just points out, by the way, what about actually the other way around? What about if the chaser that normally is rented, but this is a person who could get lodging for free in the area? Tosfos discusses that actually he'd be potter in that case. He'd be potter if it's something that normally would be rented, but this is a person who does not normally have a need of renting places. So then Tosfos says that maybe it would be Grumma and therefore it'd be Potter. There are other Rishonim who disagree with that and say that it'd be Chayav.
Oh, yeah. If it's rented normally, it's bar rights, we'd lose money.
Right, but then you could argue that it's Grumma. You could argue it indirectly. It's Grumma meaning indirect. It's an indirect damage.
Who cares? It's a damage.
Grumma bin Azik and Potter. Anyway, that's how it's Grumma bin Azik.
What?
Means if you cause it in an indirect way, you didn't directly cause the Hezek.
Why is it indirect? He was on the premises. Like that, renting it.
Because right now there was nobody coming to rent it anyway. So okay, I don't know. You know what? Tosfos goes on and says something even more surprising. Suppose that somebody throws another person out of the house and locks the door. Tosfos says it would be only Grumma.
That is losing much more then.
But okay. Anyway, like I said, there are other Rishonim who disagree with that. By the way, I mean, with all of this, with this then and his other culture business, it does say in Shulchan Aruch, if the guy specifically tells him, "I don't want you to be here," then you don't have that. Well, actually, it's not so simple. You would think then and his other culture. Let's talk on Amid Bay. You would think maybe Kofin Amid Esdoyim. Maybe you should argue that after all, what you're not losing anyway in the Amid Esdoyim. Wait. So wait. Okay. So So my, so what's the, so Rav Chiska is saying, this is the question that we have. Must the Amalei my chasar tichas? Is it that the squatter is able to say, I shouldn't owe you any money for it. After all, you didn't lose anything. You weren't using the place to rent out anyway. A duma must be Amar, or maybe not. Maybe the owner of the place is able to say, oh, it's Hanis. The fact of the matter is, you had Hana. If it hadn't been for my chasar, you would have had to rent a hotel room or whatever, and therefore, you ought to pay me for that. By the way, I was looking online. They have a number of interesting present day kinds of things that come out of this kind of thing. One, the Business Halacha Institute, for example, has a website where they have a lot of interesting shiurim and things of this sort. And they have a couple of interesting ones over there. One involves a person who was going to be away for a few weeks, and somebody figured to use his parking space. So that's exactly the case. He wasn't going to be using it anyway. But then on the other hand, he's saving $25 a day or whatever on parking in a lot. So that's Rav Chista saying, this is this Mili Malyus. This is this wonderful concept that we were talking about in the Mismadrish, and too bad you weren't there. Amalei. Yeah, there's a deep concept, yeah. Amalei, so Rami Bachama says, Mas Nifini. You didn't even have to make sort of big deal out of it. You can prove it from a Mishnah. Hey, Mas Nifin. What Mishnah? Amalei, so Rami Bachama tells him, L'chit Shamish. I'll only tell you if you serve me, like a Talmud serves his Rebbe. Now, by the way, we said before, Rav Chisda was Rami Bachama's Rebbe. Later, maybe at the time he wasn't a Shver yet. But later on, he was a Shver, whatever. Haytochen, he's telling him that. So the Rav Shimon Shkop, for example, or the Shaar Yosha brings in the Hakdama to his book, that what he was there to say, safer, that what Rami Bachama basically was doing, he's just saying, I want to see, yes, you may be my Rebbe and everything, but first, if you need to know this from me, let's see that you take a show, a shtickle masid of nefesh v'torah, basically, that you're willing to lower yourself and then give me a little shimsh.
So maybe
you
want to take a model.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Okay, maybe.
I'm thinking that.
Interesting possibility, yeah. Could be. There is, by the way, incidentally, by the way, Rav Akiva Eger brings up references over here in Gilui Nashaf, an interesting discussion that the Mishnah Lamelech and a bunch of other Achronim had on the issue of the Chista with a Kohen. How are you allowed to have a Kohen do work for you? The Kiddushin, you're supposed to show. So we discussed it in Kiddushin when we were talking about an Eved Ivri Kohen. Yes, we mentioned that there's a whole discussion about that.
Right.
So one answer. Rami Racham was not a Kohen. Rava was it? Rava, actually, no. Tosfos discusses in a couple of places. Is it Rava or is it Rava? In the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, for example, when it says Rava and Abaya, Tosfos says maybe it's actually supposed to be Rava. Whatever, the gear that we have over there is Rava and Abaya. Tosfos says maybe it's supposed to be Rava.
That's
crazy. Right? That's what I'm saying. That Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, also we had in Yevamos, that says that Rava and Abaya were descended from Eli. Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah discusses over there maybe the gear says supposed to be Rava. But Tosfos is not necessarily, because based on the Gemara in Chulin, apparently Rava was not a Kohen. Anyway, the bottom line is Rami Bachama was certainly not a Kohen. Haytochen is telling Rav Chisda to serve him. And the Mishnah Melech gives the answer, you're allowed to have a Kohen serve you if you're paying him for it. In this case, Rami Bachama is going to be paying him by answering him the question.
Oh, that's nice.
Also, by the way, in
the
what? Right. Okay, so again, you're paying him. You can have a case in Bechor that's involved. Kohen is working as a shepherd for Israel. Yeah, okay.
But we said, I think, that if the Kohen doesn't have panasa, then...
There is that, too, yeah. But here, Rav Chisda had panasa, but yeah. There is, by the way, the Iyun Yaakov has an interesting, a shtickle pilpul, why if it's Rami Bachama, a different reason why Rami Bachama doubts the one Rav Chisda to serve him before he tells him the halacha. In Pirkei Avos, it says, v'yishtamash v'yirvi, with the Maslis Pirkei Avos. Hillel says, v'yishtamash v'taga cholof, that anybody who uses the crown of Torah will go away from the world. There's two possible meanings of it. One is that you're not allowed to have Talmud Chacham do work for you. The other is that you're not allowed to use the Torah for your covered. Now, using the Torah for your covet ought to be Zen and Avazalei Chosid, because the Torah is not losing by it. But if we say, so Rami Bachama is saying, you serve. That way you'll demonstrate that the Yishtamash V'Taga Cholof does not mean that you're not allowed to use the services of Tavit Chacham because I'm using you. Therefore, that'll help you remember that it means the other thing. You're not allowed to have, you're not allowed to take covet from the Torah, even though the Torah is not losing by it, because Zen and Avazalei Chosid Chayav, as he's going to prove. So Rav Chisda shokel sudre karachle. So Rav Chisda took Rami Bachama's turban and folded it up for him. Amalei. So then
that's the way of serving
him. I saw somebody gave an explanation, actually, I don't remember who, that Rami Bar Chama meant, I want you to give me smicha. It may make it that I should be a rav now. So therefore, Korach Sudri, according to that, would mean he wound the turban on his head, which was the official insignia of the Talmud Chacham in those days. Anyway. Amalei, the Rami Bar Chama says, it's our Mishnah. Im nenis meshalam es masha nenis. We see in our Mishnah that if the animal had hanah from what it ate, even though it's not something that you would normally feed it, you pay for what it had hanah. So you go according to that number. The point is you go according to the hanah.
It's
the same thing. But wait. Omar Rava, the Rava says afterwards, look how much a person who the Eibishter helps him, who has siyata d'shmaya, namely Rava Bachoma, how he doesn't feel bad, like Magish, he doesn't even realize how much the Eibishter helped him. He doesn't even realize that there was a flaw in his argument. We see in this case that even though the case at hand of Zenan of Zelech Chaser is not exactly like the Mishnah, nevertheless, Rav Chista accepted the answer from him and didn't shlug him up. What's the tack of the difference? Hi Zenan of Zelech Chaser, hi Zenan of Zelech Chaser. The question they were asking in this Medrash that Rav Chista brought up is Zenan of Zelech Chaser. The case of our Mishnah, where the animal ate Ksusu Kalim or what have you, or is that or ate, you know, ate barley or whatever, is then and is that chaser? The other guy didn't lose his barley is gone. So therefore it's not exactly the same thing. Sure, you could argue is that chaser? Whereas Rechitz's case is then and is that loy chaser. So it's not exactly the same thing. The Rami Bachama, so okay, what would Rami Bachama answer to that? He would say, Stam Peris, Rishasarab, Makurim Maskiru. True, but if a person leaves his Peris in Rishasarabim, you can assume that he is Maskir then, because they're gonna get damaged anyway. They're gonna get damaged or trampled on or whatever anyway. Which Tosfos says doesn't mean he's completely Maskir then. If it's completely Maskir then, there's nothing to talk about. There's no hezek to pay for. It means he has a certain yush that he figured, you know what, they're not gonna stay intact. They're gonna get trampled on or whatever. And then so they still belong to him. No, so therefore they still belong to him, but therefore he figures he's only going to get out of it. So therefore, in that sense, Rami Bachama would argue it is Zenan of Zelah Chaser. Now, so going back to when we said this, the Gemara is going to now continue with this discussion of Zenan of Zelah Chaser, but Tosfos points out that in Bava Basra and in a few other places in Shas, Gemara discusses the concept of koifin al midas zayim, that we force a person to allow something when otherwise it would be midas zayim to not to. What about over here? For example, that's the argument. Lachora, in this case over here, Zenan of Zelech Chaser, if Reuben is going to have Hanah from living in this chaser, and you, Shimon, weren't planning to rent it out anyway, Lachora, we should say not only you shouldn't have to pay rent. Even if Shimon doesn't want to allow him to be there, Reuben ought to be able to have based in force Shimon to allow him to live there. Wouldn't it be midas zayim otherwise? So Tosfos actually says that's the thing. The difference is that Shimon has the ability to tell. The difference is, and the Mordechai explains it a little more. The Ramah brings it in Shulchan Aruch. The difference is there's a difference between ahana, where the other person wouldn't have had any possibility of doing any differently, of being able to have that enough. Whereas in this case, Shimon could always change his mind and say, you know what, I would like to rent out the place.
And then, of course, when he says that...
So therefore, he has the ability to begin with to tell Reuben, I don't want you to be here, and therefore he has the ability to do that, and Reuben would have to pay if he's going to be there. Whereas in other cases, such as cases that talks about Bava Basra, there's no way that Shimon is going to end up being able to have that hanah anyway. Regardless, it's something that the Gemara discusses the case there in Bava Basra. I don't remember. It's a case over there involving what is it? It's a case over there where you're dividing a field where I don't remember the exact case over there, but there's some case over there where we say that
he has to have she learns a house. He doesn't have a certificate of occupancy, and Reuben is there. He cannot rent it.
Again, well, if he does have a student, he can't rent it anyway. I mean, he could rent it under the table. I don't know. I mean, whatever. He still might be able to find. You know, he might be able to sublet it or whatever.
In the big house,
what about it? Wait, what?
There's a big house. The other guy, he has rooms. It's not rented.
Then a guy doesn't have to rent his estate.
Right. Maybe. I mean, you know, first of all, there's going to be... Okay, I mean, first of all, there is, when you have more people around the house, you know, there is more wear and tear on the house. The Gemara itself will bring up that point later, but, you know. Okay, maybe Saka, maybe that would be another example. Yeah. But again, you do have, again, as Tosfos is saying, and then as the Ramah brings from the Mordechai, you do have the ability of a chila to tell him no, to tell him if you want to stay here, you're going to have to pay rent.
Before he comes in.
Each time he uses it is like a new thing, kind of.
Once he's in, can you tell him no? You can't stay here?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't own the place. Yeah, you have the ability at any time to say, you know what, I want to start renting out the place or whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, the Gemara continues. Let's see if we can bring other proofs to this, as far as this case of Zen and of Delechot. Now, we learn in a Mishnah in Bava Basra, Hamakif Chaveri B'Sholosh L'Chos. So if somebody, imagine you have one person's field surround the other.
Right.
So you can see the diagram here in Rashi. The one on the outside puts up a fence that surrounds the inner field on three sides. And that's how Rashi learns it, by the way. Rashi learns that we're talking about he put up the inner fence between his field on the outside and the inner and the field on the inside.
The inner fence, this fence.
Yeah, the inner fence. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says we're actually talking about the outer fence. Anyway. The goder is the Rishonah versus Shnia versus Shlishis. So now, okay, so Hamakas Chaver means that he surrounds him on three sides. The goder to the shonim et hashniyim et hashlishis, and then he fences in the first, second, and third side. Ein mechayiv, I say. We're not mechayiv the guy in the middle to pay for any, to share in any of the expenses of putting up that fence. He's not gaining anything.
He's putting a fence.
Reuven, the guy on the outside, has put up a fence according to Rashi between him and Shimon's property. According to Tosfos, around the outer edge of his property. Either way, he only did it on three sides. We don't say that Shimon is responsible to share in the cost of that fence, because the quarter he's gaining from it also, because he's not gaining anything from it. It's still open on the fourth side.
He's gaining.
On the face of it, he's gaining. His field is now protected. But it's still open on the fourth side, so he's not. He doesn't gain anything from it.
Well, it's more protected than it was.
But still, nevertheless, Horevi is Mechaibinai. So the implication from the Mishnah thus far, that we actually, there's Machlokas that we're going to bring in a minute, the opinion of Rabbi Yosef, we're going to kind of tackle first. If Horevi is, but if he were to fence in the fourth side, Mechaibinai. So it sounds like he would be Mechaib, the guy on the inside, to share in the cost. Shmamina Zenen of Zalei Chosu Chayev. Lechora, wouldn't that be a case of Zenen of Zalei Chosu? The inner guy is gaining because now his field is protected, where otherwise he would have had to spend money on his own fence. Like this, he doesn't. The other guy is not losing because he needed the fence anyway. Lachora, that shows then and it was other chayim. The answer is no. Shiny hosam de amalei at garam to lihakei for yisera. No, not necessarily, because the Reuven has the ability to argue. I actually am chaser in this case. I am losing out on something. If your field weren't in the middle over here, I would have been able to. I wouldn't have needed, according to Rashi, I wouldn't have needed the inner fence because the inner fence is between me and you. It does help me, granted, that nothing from your fields can wander into mine, but if you weren't here, I wouldn't have needed it in the first place.
Yeah.
So therefore, since I put up fences on all four sides, and you are Nana, it's true, but I'm Chaser in the sense that I would have, if things had been different, if your field hadn't been here, I wouldn't have needed any of these fences at all. Therefore, you should share in the cost, because you're Nana. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that what we're talking about is that we're not talking about a fence between the inner and the outer field. We're talking about a fence only surrounding the outer field. So again, if it was on three sides, so if it's one fence. Yeah. So again, if it's on three sides, not to talk about. The fourth side is still open. The guy on the inside isn't gaining anything. If you have all four sides, the guy on the outside can argue, the fact of the matter is, I have a certain amount of acreage here. I have a certain amount of area of field. If your field weren't in the middle here, then the perimeter of my field would be smaller, it would be more concentrated, and therefore I'd need less fencing. Therefore, the fact that your field is in the middle over here, I'm losing out. So yes, you're Nana, but I'm Chosel, sharing
but
the cost.
He has a certain field that's limited, I mean, it's delaying. It has nothing to do with his neighbor's field.
It does in a certain sense, because if your field weren't in the middle here, then instead of my field being shaped like a ring, it would be shaped like a square, and it would need less fencing to surround it. So therefore, I'm chaser from the fact that you're here.
Who was there first?
Doesn't matter. Chora doesn't matter. Okay. So you can't prove anything from that, because that's not necessarily then and his other thoughts. Tashma, come, let's prove from the continuation of Mishnah. Amar Rav Yosi, Amar Nikif Pagodas Rav Yosi. Rav Yosi continues that only if the guy on the inside, Shimon, in our scenario, only if he went and fenced in the food side, then that demonstrates that he's happy with what Reuven did, because now that he's fencing in the food side, which it means that now together with the three sides that Reuven fenced in, he's got a complete fence around his field. Then Megalgal and all of the Sakol. Then we make him pay for his share of the entire thing, of the other three walls as well.
Right.
Yeah.
But just for one wall.
Why? Your one wall wouldn't do it. You paid for one wall, sure. Your one wall wouldn't do any good without the other three walls. Therefore, share in not saying making you pay for all three walls yourself out of your pocket, but share in the expenses.
How much?
50? 50-50, yeah. Again, time of the gadol nikif, lechora then, what is Rabbi Yosi saying, why are you making him chayev? Because it's the guy on the inside who put up the fourth fence, ha-makif potter, implying, according to Rabbi Yosi, that if the makif, if the guy on the outside had put up the fourth fence, then the guy on the inside would still be potter. Shmamina zenen of zalei chaser potter. Again, if we assume that that's considered zenen of zalei chaser, then we should then...
If the guy on the inside put three walls...
No, if the guy on the outside put three walls and the fourth. And Rav Yosi seems to be saying, in that case, the one on the inside, the nikdas, is potter. There you go. Zen enem is zelos chaser potter. The guy on the inside is benefiting from the four walls. The guy on the outside, on the face of it, is zelos chaser, because he put him up himself anyway. There you go, potter. The answer is shiny chasam, not necessarily, because the guy on the inside can argue that, I'm not really nenem. The Amalei can say, the didich, sagni benetir bar guzah. You know what? For me, it would have been good enough. I didn't need an actual stone wall, for example, like you put up. I could have made do, let's say, if it's just to divide my property from yours, we could have just put up a hedge of thorns or something, which would be cheap. It would be as good.
Yeah,
so why should I have to pay for the expenses of a stone wall? According to Tosfos, it would be similar. You're putting a fence around your field. As far as I'm concerned, you didn't need a stone wall. You know.
Oh, you did not.
Yeah,
what kind of wall you going to build?
Yeah, whatever.
And that's the
well, the halacha is the halacha is like Rav Yosi, actually, which is why the Gemara is putting in that part of the mission also. Okay. If the one on the inside put up a fourth wall, do you make him share? Because otherwise, he can argue that it would have been good enough a hedge of thorns. Okay. We'll continue tomorrow, Baruch Hashem.